This is an unrehearsed interview with Janie Hill Polk by Glenn Tall. The interview took place at the home of Cliff Hagen at 3637 Hidden Pine Road in Lexington, Kentucky on November 19, 2001. It is funded in part by a grant from the Kentucky Oral History Commission. This is the first of two tapes.
To the Women's Association.
Oh, you are?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So that will be another time. I will have that written down and organized. I suspect I'll have it spread.
First of all, tell me your name, just for the record.
All right. All of my names are Mary Jane Hill Mitka Polk.
Wow.
And so I'm called, these days, I'm called Janie Polk. Now, when I was in Georgetown, and from the time I was in the sixth grade on, I had dropped the Mary part of my name. And so I was Janie all the way through high school and college and ever since. And so Janie's, I still see people today who say, well, Janie Hill. And I love that. I love to hear that.
It's like they used to call my mother. Her brothers would call her Mary R. She was named Mary Rachel.
Mm-hmm.
She didn't like it. She doesn't like it to this day. How did your father come? How did you get to Georgetown?
Daddy was pastor of Deer Park Baptist Church in Louisville. And we had a lovely home, and the church was going very well. And a member of that church was Ira Porter, whose roots at Georgetown are long. And it's possible that he was the chair of the trustees. I don't remember that, but I do know he was on the board of the trustees in 1941 and 42, around that era. And so what I first remember is seeing black cars come down our long driveway and park in front of our house, and my brother and I were summarily dismissed to other parts of the house, and Daddy sat in the living room with men, and I remember hearing men's voices. And so then somewhere after that it was introduced to us that Daddy was being interviewed for the presidency of Georgetown. And a story that I think is significant, very significant, is Georgetown was in one of its very difficult times. The student body was very small. There was a lot of controversy on the campus, and funds had been impounded. Faculty ate at Rucker Hall dining room, and it was just really a low, low time. In fact, it was so low at the Kentucky Baptist Association, General Association, convention that year. They entertained a motion to close Georgetown. And Dr. Lewis Ray, I think his name was Lewis Ray, had a son named Finley Ray. He may have been Finley Ray Sr. But anyway, Dr. Ray stood up and said, let's try, before we close Georgetown, let's try one more president. And he said, I'd like to advance the name of Dr. Sandhill. So when I think of Georgetown today, and those of us who graduated from there, I think we all stand on the shoulders of Dr. Ray and people like Daddy, Mr. Porter, and people like Daddy who thought they'd try one more time.
Mm-hmm.
So then next, I was in the sixth grade this time. Next, Mother and Daddy said, let's drive over and look at Georgetown. And so I remember that. I remember that what interested me And my criteria for whether I would support my father's move was that there had to be a lot of trees on the campus for me to climb.
Is that right?
And so while they were looking around at this and that, I'm out scouting the trees. Uh-huh. And indeed, there are wonderful maple trees all over the campus. And I can point to this day to them and tell you how I learned to climb them and would sit up in the trees and overhear snatches of conversation between faculty members and all kinds of things. And I gathered some rather important information for my father.
Oh, really?
And eventually people learned to look up. Janie might be watching, or Janie might
really?
Be listening.
That's
and
great.
That just happened like
That's
that. The president's home was 408 Jackson Street, and large old Victorian home with a center hall, two rooms on either side, and a curving staircase. Mm-hmm. Large upstairs hall, two rooms on either side. Porch across the back, attic, and cellar. There was a cellar, dirt floor cellar under this. And it was just ugly as sin. It was just awful looking the first time we looked at it. Had mud-colored woodwork, I remember. The walls were very, very wide. Thick walls. It was a brick and it was old.
Uh-huh.
And so, Mother had an excellent eye for color. She was really tailor-made for her job there at Georgetown. And the first thing they did was paint the woodwork white.
Oh.
And then I remember that she and my grandmother made 40-some pair of curtains.
Wow.
For the inauguration. And these were sheer strips that hung at the windows. And there were all these old windows. So one of the early sounds, auditory stimuli I have from that, is hearing the sewing machine.
Oh my.
As Mother and Grandma, her mother,
yeah,
made the curtains. And I watched Mother transform that house over the 11 years that we were there. Until it was really beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
Just lovely and gracious, a wonderful house for entertaining. And I had they added a bathroom downstairs off of the guest room, and they added a bathroom over it, upstairs, over my room, beside my room. Mother and Daddy's room is across the hall, and they had a bathroom. And so I'm in the second guest room,
mm-hmm.
one downstairs, one upstairs, which meant that at any time when there were campus visitors and we had more than a couple,
mm-hmm.
then my room was always commandeered for the second guest room.
Oh.
And so I moved out numerous times, which was always a lot of fun for me, because I got to stay in the dormitory.
Uh-huh.
I'd go to Rucker Hall or maybe even one of the sorority houses.
So you would stay with one of the students.
That's right. And that was a real privilege to me to get to do that. And I made excellent.
Were they carefully chosen?
Yeah, sure. Well, see, Mother, it's an interesting comment either on my mother or me. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure which. But she wouldn't let me, she monitored very carefully how much time I spent around the college students because she didn't want me to be a pest.
Mm.
And I never saw myself as a pest, of course. And but I was, it was real carefully monitored that I would not just hang out with the college. I mean, a little girl looking at college students. I was fascinated by them. And so.
Especially if you wanted to feel grown up or something like that.
I guess. They just appealed to me. And then we lived on the campus. That's who were there. There were no other children on the campus. So it was the
maintenance men, the faculty, the staff, the college students. These were my friends. These were the people that I saw all the time, not other children. Mm-hmm. I had to go to school to do that. So it was an idyllic childhood for me.
So what did you feel like when your father said that y'all were going to move to Georgetown?
It wasn't hard for me to leave Louisville, but it was very difficult for my brother. He is gifted intellectually, and he was at Mayo High mm-hmm. in Louisville as a sophomore there. And for him to go from Mayo High to Garth School with about 40, 45 in your class, mm-hmm. That was difficult for Sam. But at the same time, he was able to play basketball, and I can't remember that he ever tried to play football, but he was on the debate team and everything, mm-hmm. and had opportunities for development there that he wouldn't have at huge male high school in Louisville.
So he probably, even in his 2 years there at Mayo, he wasn't involved in any kind of sports.
I don't recall that he was. I mean, Sam has always been academically inclined, and he'd much rather read.
Yeah.
And he'd much rather pursue geography or history or something like that. Mm-hmm. Daddy would try to get Sam out of the house doing something physical,
yeah.
and he tried to get me in the house doing something academic. So they had an interesting challenge in the difference in the two of us.
What are some of the interesting times that you remember as a child at Georgetown?
I remember so fondly occasions of state.
Okay.
Graduations were always really special to me because the speakers that we had in, and they stayed in their house. And then I loved to see Daddy dressed up in his academic regalia, uh-huh. and with his mortarboard and his gold tassel and his red hood over the black robe. And I would always sit in such a place so that as they processed out, mm-hmm. what do you call it? You process in. Mm-hmm. What is the academic line does? Then it exits, as it exits in the academic procession, I would sit on the edge of the aisle, and as he came up the aisle, he would reach out his hand and we would squeeze hands as he passed. Hadn't that just thrilled me to death? I adored my daddy.
Well, where did they hold assemblies like that?
Well, first, the inauguration was at the Georgetown Baptist Church.
Okay.
I have no idea where graduation was held before the chapel was built. But of course, what I'm talking about is at the chapel.
Okay.
And when was that, 47?
49.
And the building of the chapel is a huge benchmark in my childhood, huge. I can hear Mother and Daddy in the room across the hall from me talking late into the night. Mm-hmm. And then Daddy took us, he was a Virginian and a very avid, staunch believer in Virginia education particularly in uh-huh. Virginia. So we went on trips to see colleges in Virginia, particularly W&L, Washington and Lee. And like the columns are lined up when you stand in one place on Washington and Lee's campus, you see one column uh-huh. where you're looking down a long, long line of columns.
Yeah.
But the buildings are lined so that you just see one column.
Huh.
And Daddy wanted to do that at Georgetown. And if you stand, what used to be the Cook Building, I think still called the Cook Building.
Yes.
If you'll stand outside the Cook Building, you can see that, and Giddings Hall, and the chapel are all lined up. And Paul and Hall may come in that vision, too.
Okay.
But Daddy saw those buildings. He liked the layout of Washington and Lee.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're on Jackson Street and you look left to right, you see a line of buildings. They're all in your vision.
Well, and they're all, the way they're lined up is kind of interesting because you have Pauling facing Jackson Street.
Mm-hmm.
You've got Giddings facing College Street.
That's correct.
And then you've got, well, wait, you've got
the chapel,
Pauling.
The chapel faces Jackson.
Exactly. And then Cook is facing Jackson.
Mm-hmm.
Then where they put that portico on Highball is facing toward College Street.
Mm-hmm.
And then you got the Nunley Building is facing Jackson Street.
Mm-hmm. It is interesting. But there were no sidewalks on the campus when Daddy went. And all the electricity was turned off by one switch. All the electricity was turned off at 10 o'clock. And that was because of the lack of funds.
Oh.
And so the building and the sidewalks was big. The lining them up, putting lights along there, the lights that are on Giddings Drive.
Mm-hmm.
Is it still called Memorial Drive, maybe? In
yeah.
front of Giddings, that
yeah.
leads up to Main Street.
Right.
What's that called?
Well, it's still, I've always known it as Giddings Drive.
Okay, well, but all of the lights on either side of there are in memory of a Georgetown graduate who died in World War II.
Yeah.
And so I remember seeing these were war years.
Right.
So I remember that getting the lights up across the campus, the sidewalks, the lights across the campus, the lights on Giddings Drive. And then the story of the chapel. I have to regress just a little bit. When we came in 42, October of 42, Daddy and I were sitting on the front porch, and across the street next to Giddings Hall was a place where the old chapel had been.
Mm-hmm.
And it had burned down. And the basement hole of the chapel was still there.
Oh, it was?
And people threw things in there all the time and burned them.
Huh.
It was like a dump.
Yeah.
That constantly burned.
Yeah.
And so I remember saying to Daddy, I wish I was more like Sam, who was so excelled in school so clearly early on. I wish I was more like Sam. I wish I didn't daydream so much.
Uh-huh.
And Daddy said to me, dream your dreams, Janie. Dream your dreams. I dream that where you see smoke rising out of that hole across the street,
mm-hmm.
one day one of the most beautiful buildings in central Kentucky will be standing there.
Mm-hmm.
So that was early that
yeah.
Daddy had that vision. And then in 49, as it went up, we studied the plans and all, and every night Daddy would take my hand and we would go over and walk the beams or whatever was up in the chapel every day.
Mm-hmm.
We saw the progress of the chapel.
It took a little while to build, didn't it?
Yeah, I have no idea.
I think my sense is that it took about 2 years.
I have no idea.
And I think it's partly because it was difficult to get the funds in.
I doubt that. He sold the bricks. You know, people bought bricks.
Oh, like individual, as,
yeah,
a, as a fundraiser?
And they used that as a fundraiser a couple of years ago,
mm-hmm.
again.
They did.
Resurrected that. And so the dedication of the chapel was the apex of Daddy's life, and certainly one of the apexes of my life.
So all the remaining walls of the old chapel had been were gone. It was just a hole that was still remained.
And the new chapel, 50 years ago, the new chapel is not on the same grounds, same site. The site where the old chapel was beside Giddings Hall. There is a lot there. There's something. There used to be a campus bookstore there, eventually.
Oh, so it's between the new
yeah,
chapel and the old
right.
and Giddings
right.
Hall.
That's right.
I thought John L. Hill Chapel sort of occupied part of the site. Anyway.
It may do part of it, but it was closer to Giddings Hall where all that.
I knew the old chapel was a long building, not the way John L. Hill Chapel is, but
mm-hmm.
it went like east and west instead
mm-hmm.
of north and south.
I see. Okay. All
right. Have you ever seen a picture of the old chapel?
It's been a long time.
It's a fascinating building. I'm getting ready to do an exhibit on it mm-hmm. at the museum in Georgetown. And it had not only the chapel in it, but the gymnasium, the library, all the Literary Society meeting rooms, a museum, and some other professors' offices.
Do you have any idea when it burned?
1930. April of 1930.
Think of the loss of that building.
Uh-huh.
To that campus.
It was built in 1893 and it burned in 1930.
What? How did it burn? Did
they think it was an electrical short out
yeah.
in the tower, the clock tower.
So it had been, it was 12 years.
It was nearly 20 years after the burning that the new chapel was built.
Yeah, and we came there 12 years after.
Yeah.
So that means that whole length of time in there,
mm-hmm.
it was that gaping hole.
All that gaping hole. And in the first few years, they couldn't knock down the old walls. They were so solid.
I wonder if that was built about the time the president's home was built.
I think it was.
Because, as I say, the walls must have been a foot thick.
Mm-hmm.
It was cool in the summer.
Uh-huh.
Very cool.
Kind of, which is kind of nice for an old Victorian house.
Oh, it was just wonderful. I just have the most marvelous memories of it. Mother was very hospitable, and you can talk with anybody who's at Georgetown during their years, and they'll mention Mother and how hard she worked.
Uh-huh.
Oh, she worked so hard and put on dinners, and they had GA house parties. Is that a term that's familiar to you, GAs?
Well, I know what GAs are.
Yeah, Girls Auxiliary,
yeah.
And they had spring vacation. They would bring GAs to Georgetown, put them in the dormitories and all. And of course, it was a wonderful way to recruit students.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a reception at our house. And there were weddings there. Students would want to get married there.
At the house?
Yeah. All kinds of receptions. And dinners. Mother just loved it so well at putting on dinners. One of the things that is interesting, Mother and Daddy were both so devoted to service.
Mm-hmm.
And they were both so devoted to Georgetown
mm-hmm.
that Sam and I grew up certainly surrounded by love.
Mm-hmm.
We were not the star attraction, though. The college was.
Mm-hmm.
We were involved, all of us were involved in building a college.
Mm-hmm.
And so there was this other thing that was so important and the passion for it.
Yeah.
Was there, it was a wonderful way. Every Sunday afternoon, people would come to the college, parents would come and bring their children around. They would come to our house and knock on the door, and Daddy would say, Janie, we'll show you around.
Uh-huh.
And so I toured the campus with prospective students and their parents. I did that I don't know how long.
Yeah.
Somewhere, freshman, sophomore in high school, well, Daddy entrusted that to me. It was neat for him.
Yeah.
But what one of the things that I have processed for years since is there were no funds allocated, because there couldn't be.
Yeah.
There were no funds allocated for public relations, entertaining, furniture, a staff for mother, any of it.
Yeah.
So a lot of the big, lovely, old furniture that I have now were bought by Mother and Daddy out of off of a very low salary. And then all the entertaining they did came out of their pocket.
Yeah.
The cleaning of the house. I was commandeered in I was given the job early on of helping Mother serve dinners.
Mm-hmm.
So I would wash dishes and I'd serve, and she was big on manners and doing things right, setting a table just exactly, big on etiquette.
Oh, okay.
And I got to learn all that. Sam was not involved in any of that.
Where was he at?
Well, see, he's 4 years older than I.
Right.
So he was in college and graduate school.
By that time?
By the time I was a freshman. And when I was a freshman in high school, he was a freshman in college.
Okay.
So just followed those years on.
Right.
And so his was, he was involved in the college and working and making money and going places and speaking and doing all kinds of things like that, while I'm my mother's aide or assistant.
Right.
It was a gender-based thing.
Is there any particular occasion that really sticks in your mind? It's special?
In the house?
Or yeah.
What are you doing in the house? Well, the dinners, all of the dinners or graduation. All of those were big occasions. And
so if she had a set routine or...
Oh, yeah. I mean, when the silver would be polished, when the table was set, when she would cook, when she would do this, when she would do that.
And she had none of that before she came to the college.
She was 20 years younger than Daddy.
Uh-huh.
He was graduating with his PhD from Southern Seminary, THD, from Southern Seminary, and he was her pastor in New Albany, Indiana.
Okay.
So as he gets his doctorate and heads to a pastorate in Richmond, Virginia, he marries Mother, who is 1920, because Daddy was late in getting his education because he'd go to school and then he'd work.
Yeah.
He'd go to school and work. And finally
it was all during the Depression, I guess.
Yes, it was. That's correct. So the first pastorate they had in Richmond, which is where Sam and I were born.
Okay.
Two women who were these marvelous old Virginia cooks, hospitality, just doyens of Richmond, took Mother under their wing and taught her.
Oh.
She was their pastor's wife. And they taught her all of these wonderful skills.
Mm.
And they would prepare dinners. Mother is you know, 22, 23. Daddy's 42, 43.
Yeah.
Pastor of a very nice church. And they'd come in and fix the meal and then leave.
Yeah.
And people thought Mother did it.
Oh.
So they what they taught Mother about entertaining, she used as a pastor's wife in Louisville.
Okay.
And then when we came to Georgetown, she then is, in her 30s.
Mm-hmm.
And that just became a full-blown blossom thing for her.
What do you remember about Christmases?
Music, wonderful music.
The decoration, I mean everything. I mean, just
it was gorgeous. Our particular, there were never a lot of gifts.
Mm-hmm.
We were living on a shoestring.
Yeah.
And there were never a lot of gifts, but I remember the music and the college, because you see, after the students left for our Christmas break, we were there on the campus by ourselves.
Yeah.
So Christmas was really college and then very quiet.
Yeah.
And another treasured story from my childhood is early on I was attracted to music and loved beautiful music. And the oratorio choir practice was every Tuesday night in Giddings Hall, which is right straight across the street from the President's Home. I mean, the sidewalk in front of the President's Home connected.
Is
it? With the sidewalk and the... to let me go to oratorio choir practice, because of course I could hear it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they started practicing in September. The doors would be open. I could hear it.
Yeah.
And I begged and begged to be able to go to oratorio choir practice. And Mother finally relented after I promised not to be a pest. And I went every Tuesday night from the time I was in the sixth grade until I graduated from college to oratorio choir practice, and they practiced the Messiah every year. And you think of the richness, it's like the Messiah is mine. I mean, I know that music
mm-hmm.
so well. And I can see different professors conducting it. I can hear different soloists, whoever the soloist was of the year.
Mm-hmm.
And different sweet college girls would take me under their wing and let me sit with them or save me a seat.
Mm-hmm.
And as I think of it now, I can imagine the college students looking at this little 12, 13-year-old girl who came to oratorio choir practice every Tuesday night. But what a wonderful, wonderful thing that was.
So that was one tradition of the college during Christmas. What was another?
Always the Messiah. Always.
Yeah, what was another one? You remember?
Presence reception every fall.
Yeah.
Where Mother and Daddy dressed up, long dress and black tie, and they greeted the faculty. It was at our house for many years. Then it was in the gym.
Okay.
Graduations were big. Who was going to get the honorary doctorate that year?
Uh-huh.
I'll have to reflect on that a little bit to see what other traditions
that you got involved in while a kid.
There was a wonderful candlelight service at the Presbyterian Church put on by Sigma Kappa Sorority. And the girls would process singing, "Candlelight burning bright, shed your glow upon the girls of Sigma K." It was a beautiful, haunting melody that the girls sang, and they all wore white robes, and then they had a creche. They had a real Mary and a real Joseph and a real baby, and read Christmas poetry or scripture for this. We look forward to the Sigma Kappa candlelight service every year. That was a tradition. May Day.
I've always heard about May Day.
May Day was wonderful. They chose a May Queen and King. My brother was May King when he was in college. They did the Maypole dance. So, does that mean anything to you?
A little bit, yes. I mean, it's a British tradition, I think. But I mean, it was
a pole in the center,
right? And
all these streamers, and they just wound and wound and wound and wound until it was all wound.
And usually the women do that, don't they?
I think girls did that. Yeah. Yes, I think girls and.
It was sort of a fertility rite.
That would figure. I mean, I remember wispy, kind of. Nymph-like girls dressed in that way doing this Maypole dance. You understand that there was no dancing on the campus.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
of course not drinking.
Yeah, well, sure.
Of course not drinking, but there was no dancing. And the rules, the girls were allowed so many dates. A month, but dates to church were free. So you go with a guy Sunday morning, Sunday night, Wednesday night.
Yeah.
Free dates.
Yeah.
And by gosh, I mean, the church was always just full of couples. You had, if you were on the dean's list, you got more dates. Closing time was 10:30 or 11.
For when?
For it's when the dormitories were locked. You had to be in by then. And if not, there was some kind of penalty.
But the men didn't have the same kind of restrictions?
Well, I don't think so. But I remember, since you couldn't drink or you couldn't dance, there was a lot of petting that went on. I mean, couples would sit on the campus and smooch. It's interesting to me to recall that a lot of girls who got in trouble being too much hugging and kissing.
Yeah.
And they would be campused. That means you can't go off of the campus. And they were dating ministerial students. Yeah. We knew that. We knew the ministerial students were troubled. And one would think that in a repressive atmosphere like that, personality development couldn't take place.
Yeah.
And the opposite is true. Since you couldn't do those things, you did other things. You had hay rides, and you had pep rallies, and the debate team was big, and the choir was big, the oratorio choir was big, mass crafters were big, football, basketball games, track meets, all of those kinds of things were big. And the sororities and fraternities had socials, which were really banquets. But they had favors, and you wore formal attire, and all of that. And my friends, three others particularly, who are good friends today from those years, none of our children have the stories to tell about their college years like we do.
Yeah.
We consider ourselves very rich, that we had a very rich college education experience of professors taking an interest in us. And that is really, a lot of my development had to do with professors who took an interest in me. And certainly my friends, one of whom became a Fulbright scholar, it was all because of Dr. Carl Fields.
Oh, really?
So, small college, Christian college, headed by a man who was deeply committed to the college, to Christian education, which is broader than Baptist education, and that eventually got him in trouble. But he, Christian education was what Daddy was about.
Is there any drawbacks about being the daughter of a president of a college, a small Christian college?
Certainly there were. Well, they were exceeded by the advantages. But, yeah, I was expected to be perfect, and it stirred me a great deal that I wasn't. It stirred me a great deal that I was not as bright as my brother, academically at any rate. I think there were people who would not be my friend because I was the president's daughter, boys who would not date me because I was the president's daughter, boys who were teased unmercifully when they did date me because of Daddy.
How was your daddy? Now, when you, when did you start dating? Did you start dating after you started college or before?
Before. I was allowed to date some at 16. We ran around in a group. We paired off, but there were a group of eight of us, four couples, that ran around together. And then my junior and senior year, I just, you know, I didn't go steady, and oh, it was just fun. I had boyfriends, and I'd go places with Daddy when he was speaking, and there was always some boy there. So I got a lot of mail and had wonderful friends all over Central Kentucky. It was really neat.
Was your dad ever hard on your dates?
The expectation was there. And this is a personal story of father and daughter. I was about in the seventh or eighth grade. And you really getting interested in boys. Really getting interested. And there was a boy named Jimmy Bennett who gave me his Boy Scout pin. And he was a year older than I. Maybe 2 years. I think 2 years older than I. And so one night, everybody sort of congregated at my house, the president's home. And we decided to play hide and seek, and we were up to no good. The girls going off and the boys going off. And so Daddy saw me, saw Jimmy and me take off down where the grill was behind our house. It's where the sorority houses are now.
Okay.
And we were going down there to hold hands or something equally bad. But you know, this was not to be done. And Daddy saw it. And so he came out of the back door and called me. And of course I had to appear from wherever I was hiding. And he said, "You all come here, all of you come here." And he sent everybody home. and said, Jamie, I want to talk to you.
Uh-oh.
Oh, I was embarrassed and scared, petrified.
Mm-hmm.
Mother wasn't there. And we went in the room, as you walked in the front hall, we went in the room to the left, which is like a den. It was a second living room.
Mm-hmm.
And we sat there, and it was, I remember it being dark. And Daddy said, Janie, all of your life, you are going to have opportunities to be with boys. He said, you like boys and boys like you.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to have to be making some choices about what you do, what your behavior is like. And he said, I hope you will always make choices that are to the good for yourself, for the boy, and for Mary, as my mother,
mm-hmm.
and me. And that's all he said.
Oh, really?
And he never told Mother.
Oh, he did? Now, where was she?
She was out at some meeting or something.
Oh, is that right?
She was away. He never told her. But it was a perfect way to handle me.
Uh-huh.
Because he played on my love for him,
mm-hmm.
my respect for him, and his hope for me that I would live a good life.
Mm-hmm.
And he knew that I was just mischievous enough and daring enough that trouble was a possibility.
Uh-huh.
And that was the perfect way.
Because
I wouldn't have hurt him for anything in the world.
Yeah.
I was in the 7th or 8th grade, so what are you, 13, 14?
I think that's about right. You were just breaking teenager,
right.
I guess.
That's right.
Goodness gracious.
Isn't that a beautiful story?
Uh-huh. So did you have birthday parties in the house?
I don't remember birthday parties. Do not.
Did y'all have any kind of personal, I mean, parties just for you when you were growing up in any kind of parties? It just involved you?
I have
you?
No memory of that.
Huh.
I had people come over and spend the night.
Uh-huh.
But I have no memory of that. That's a very insightful and interesting question. One which I will have fun thinking about and asking Sam about as well. I don't ever remember being slighted in any way. I'm sure I got birthday presents.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't remember that.
I assume that you all belong to the Georgetown Baptist Church.
Of course.
What was it like going to church there? Before you went,
it was hard. The preachers were not always good.
Yeah.
They were very strict and stern. And as a kid, it didn't appeal to me a lot, though I was there a lot and a devoted Christian. I suspect the boys that I got to see had as much to do with it. I mean, that's just the church was the social center.
Yeah.
And, whenever I could, I went with Daddy, who spoke all over the state. I went with him and would listen to him preach, speak.
So he would preach at a lot of churches?
All the time.
All the time.
And I was at a funeral 3 weeks ago, and somebody said, oh, are you Janie Hill? I said, yes. Oh, I remember your daddy and how I could hear him speak, and I love to hear him speak.
Uh-huh.
I'll never forget your daddy. He meant so much to my life. And Daddy's been dead 41 years.
Wow.
I remember being conscious of gender inequity.
Uh-huh. How did that play out?
Somewhere around this, again, how old am I at that time? 7th, 8th grade. They ask at the Georgetown Baptist Church, they ask all the deacons in the church to stand and come forward, and they made a circle around the church. I mean, the whole outside wall, you know that church, what it is formed like.
Mm-hmm.
It's a Victorian church with lots of alcoves and stuff.
Oh, uh-huh.
But, and so the deacons were lined up all the way around the church. And I looked and thought, well, I guess if you're a female, you don't ever lead. You can't ever be anything in the church if you're a female, if you're a little girl. And I thought, at the time, I've got the wrong equipment. I remember thinking that.
Uh-huh.
So it made a clear picture. And I'm so glad that has changed.
Uh-huh.
And that women, there's so many strong, wonderful women who have voices in the church. And
mm-hmm.
I'm so glad.
Now, when it came time for you to choose a college, there was no question.
Brochures, catalogs, college visits, that was never a question.
Uh-huh.
It just, you went from being a senior in high school to freshman in Georgetown.
Okay.
Same for my brother. And another thing is, I didn't know that you couldn't go to college.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know that it was possible.
Not to even go.
Not to go. And certainly in my later life, I realized how fortunate I was to have an education given me.
Mm-hmm.
And that I lived such a sheltered life that I didn't even know you couldn't go to college.
Mm-hmm.
Think of that.
Yeah.
My whole life had been geared toward college.
Do you think you would have chosen not to go if you had knew about the choice?
I don't think so. Yeah. I adored Daddy so much that to receive a college degree from him, that just that superseded everything.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a glorious day.
Now, when did you enter?
I graduated from high school in 49.
So you started in 50.
Mm-hmm.
Well, 49.
No, 49.
The fall of 49.
And I graduated in 53. And remember walking up on the stage at graduation and looking at Daddy as I crossed the stage to him. He was standing there with my diploma in his hand. And I mouthed the words to him, which he clearly read, I mean I lip read. I said, I'm gonna kiss you.
Uh-huh.
And I could see his color. So when I got to him, he handed me my diploma and I reached over and hugged him and kissed him. And I remember loud, long ovation.
Uh-huh.
From everybody who was attending. It was a unique one moment.
Uh huh. Well, it was in a new chapel too,
yeah,
practically.
That's right. That's right. So Sam doesn't have these kinds of memories. He will give you the history, the dates, the academic landmarks. He will remember all of those things.
Mm-hmm.
But I was the child of the heart, apparently.
Mm-hmm.
Because I was just this unit and this love for Georgetown College.
Mm-hmm.
And all of the conversations in our house were about dreams and faculty and students who came out of nowhere and made it.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly my experience at the Lexington Hearing and Speech Center, where I was executive director for 23 years, it was me replicating what I had seen Daddy do. There's no question in my mind of that.
What are the memories that you had? You lived at home while you were going to school.
Yeah, but I was I'd stay in the dorm, and I was in a sorority.
Okay.
And I stayed at the sorority house a lot. Was over there spending the night and so forth, but I lived at home.
Okay. What are some of the memories you have about your sorority?
Oh, we just, a few weeks ago, I was invited back to the Sigma Kappa house because it's 50 years since I was initiated.
I heard about the anniversary.
Oh, gosh. I just hate these 50-year things. I just get everybody to know exactly how old you are and so forth. So I got over to the house, and I was the only one of our pledge group who came.
Uh-huh.
And so I stood up in front of the girls and I said, ta-da, this is what it looks like 50 years later. And they laughed and we had a good time. But I having grown up on the campus, now this is biased, what I'm going to tell you right now, is certainly biased. But having grown up on the campus and seeing the girls, the women who were members of Sigma Kappa sorority, I was impressed with who they were,
mm-hmm.
their accomplishments, what they stood for. They were the ones in oratorio choir, they were the ones in debate, they were campus leaders. I just respected those
mm-hmm.
women. But it had fallen on hard times, and Sigma Kappa was not the lead sorority. Kappa Delta was. And so I decided that I wanted to be a Sigma Kappa, and I would persuade any of the really sharp freshmen there on the campus, let's go, let's join that sorority, and let's bring it back to where it was.
Mm-hmm.
And so certainly a big factor in that was a marvelous woman. From my high school class and all the way through college, Lucille Hempel. She now lives in Vermont. She's as fine today as she was then. Lucille Parker is her name. And so Lou and I got busy, and we had a pledge class of 22 girls, which was a huge pledge class.
Sure.
And many of the things that are in the sorority house now, for example, a gold mirror that is there. When you walk in the house, you see that gold mirror.
Mm-hmm.
I knew all these people on the campus, and I knew all the alumni, I knew the trustees. I knew all these people.
Yeah.
So I said, don't you want to help us?
Yeah.
And they thought this was cute or fun or something.
Yeah.
And so all these people helped. Gave mirrors, Mr. Wolf gave us the mirror. People gave us furniture. People gave us stuff, and we turned that thing around. And when I was a senior, I went to our sorority convention in Pasadena, California, and received the Silver Circus for having the most improved chapter in the nation.
Wow. Now, so, where was the house located?
The Student Center building. Now, what is the street right now behind the Student Center building?
College
Street. Okay, if you would go out the back of the Student Center building and walk across the street, that's where the house was.
Oh, okay, so that's the house that was in the parking lot of Anderson Hall.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it's the one that burned sometime in the 60s.
Mm-hmm. Had a wonderful, we really had a good sorority. Mrs. Parrish was our house mother. She was the mother of Almond Cook. He was one of the donors of the Cook Building.
Okay.
And Mrs. Parrish was a lovely, dignified, attractive widow of a minister. And she was our house mother. We adored her. And standards were tough. Academic standards, every standard was high.
Uh-huh.
And we all look at the development, leadership development that was made possible for us through working on the sorority.
Uh-huh.
But you see, again, what I had seen Daddy do was transposed into building a sorority, building that chapter. I mean, you just see the influence of my parents over and over
mm-hmm.
and over
okay.
in my life.
Okay. What kind of, now what do you remember about the social occasions of your sorority?
How hard we worked on.
Uh-huh.
I mean, Rush.
What's involved with Rush?
Rush was in the fall.
Okay.
And so you started looking at your freshman class as it came in,
uh-huh.
seeing who you wanted to get to be your sorority sister, who you wanted to pledge your sorority. So you had to be everywhere, and you had to be nice to them, and there were rules. I don't remember what they were,
mm-hmm.
but illegal recruiting, whatever that might have been, wasn't allowed. And then we would have these elaborate rush parties, and since you couldn't dance,
yeah.
and there were never any cocktails or anything like that.
Yeah.
It had to be creative, they had to have themes.
Yeah.
And you had to put it all together on a shoestring.
What kind of themes did you have?
I don't remember.
Yeah. But you decorated the house?
I decorated the house and wrote plays and little skits and dressed up.
So you had to try to show that you can have fun. How did you impress on them that this is going to be it's also serious?
Well, because our academic record was good. I mean, we pointed up all of the people that we had and everything on the campus.
Now, did you do some preliminary research about their academic backgrounds, or?
No, I don't recall that.
So you just basically got that information just from talking to
mm-hmm.
them?
Must have. Records and that kind of thing. I mean, we knew who was the legacy.
Yeah.
Whose parents had been.
Okay.
Things like GPAs and stuff like that that is so well known today.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't know that.
Okay.
Have no memory of that.
What kind of social events, what were the social events that you would have during the school year?
At the sorority?
Yeah.
Just?
At the sorority.
You had Rush, you had the Sigma Kappa Christmas pageant, sing, so forth. Oh yes, remind me to talk about campus sing.
Okay.
And then you had initiation, as I recall, was probably February, March. Initiation was big.
Mm-hmm.
Then the formal, the spring formal, and not only yours, but the fraternities and the other sorority had them.
Mm-hmm.
So you might go to five formal. No,
uh-huh.
You didn't go to the other sororities. You might go to four formals.
Uh-huh.
If you got asked.
Oh yeah.
When to go as a date, somebody. I think this is a good time to talk about campus sing.
Okay.
Wonderful occasion. All sororities and fraternities, independent groups as well, prepared to sing as a group a number, maybe two.
Mm-hmm.
And it was held in the chapel. And so you practiced. Think of the team building of this. You practice, you had campus sing practice every week. And then you dressed alike, meaning all white blouses with purple streamers or something.
Uh-huh.
And you filed up there on the stage.